Can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? Shabbat shalom, everyone. My name is Henny Julia Biab Halakins, and I'll like to say forever as priest starting very soon. It's now time to start Friday's Seas for Sabbath services.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. My name is Henny Julia Biab Halakins, and I'll like to say forever as priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to introduce to you the sons and daughters of Yisrael now entering the sanctuary.
I'd like to introduce our first speaker, the great brother Zephaniah Hawkins.
Shalom. You can be seated. Yahweh. Okay, if you would, you can be turning over in your books of Yahweh to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, and you probably already know we'll be starting here in verse 5. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 5. It said, "And you must love Yahweh your Father. You must love Yahweh your Father with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might." Now, this is a must. So, in other words, Yahweh commands and he demands loyalty. Now, I titled this speech, "Wake Up," because people like to try to do things to get around the law. But if you think about it, it's such nonsense because without the laws of Yahweh, you're unaware of or you don't know what you're doing. They were given to mankind to keep him from blowing himself up. In the book of Proverbs, we're shown something here. And brother, it'll serve you really well to pay attention to this message and follow along. But in the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, we're shown something here. Chapter 3, verse 13. It's chapter 3, verses 13. It says, "Blessed is the man who finds wisdom. And blessed is the man who gains understanding." Now look back up to the top of that verse there. It says, "Blessed is the man who finds wisdom." And you got a little M there. Now look at the margin of what it says. "Who finds the house of Yahweh." So what are these blessings for? Well, if you look over here to Proverbs chapter chapter 1 and verse 6. And read the first 10 words. And it says, "For cultivation of the mind and training in moral, training in ethical principles." Now this word cultivate, it says cultivation, but it's from the word cultivate. Cultivate. It says to develop or to improve by education, training, to train, or to refine. The word refine, it means to be free from coarse or unsuitable or immoral characteristics. So, this whole training that we're going through is to switch us over to making conscious choices. Because everyone is making choices. But these choices are being made on an instinct. It's occurring compulsively on a different level. Now, so what we're doing here is we're cultivating the realms. And if you turn over to Ephesians chapter 5, we'll be reading from Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15. If I can find it here. Okay, Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15. It says, "See then that you walk circumspectly, aware of every action, not as fools, but as the wise." Now, the only way to do this is we have to take the road less traveled. And Yahshua spoke of this way in Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Let's take a look at that. Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. It says, enter in through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And many are those who go that way. And it's the many. Why do the many go that way? The answer is in verse 14. Because straight is the gate and narrow is the way, and few they are who find it. Well, who find what? We just read it. The house of Yahweh, or this wisdom. Now, some call this way the ascetic path. Now, an ascetic person is one who practices severe self-discipline, abstaining from all forms of indulgence. And the reason why this way is less traveled is because you have to start doing things that are naturally not comfortable for you. If you have to do something that is not comfortable for you, you can only do it consciously. There's no other way to do it. If you do something that you like, you can do it compulsively or on an instinct. Now, an instinct is something that occurs naturally. You don't have to learn it. For instance, babies cry by instinct. Ducks follow their mothers by instinct. And the prophet Jeremiah, he spoke about this in Jeremiah chapter 8, verses 7. Let's turn and look at that. Jeremiah chapter 8 and verse 7. I do believe. Wrong page. Yes, verse 7. It says, yes, the stork in the heavens knows her appointed times of migration, and the turtle dove and the swallow and the crane observe the times of their return and migration. So they know when it's time to return and to migrate. And this is all built into them. It says, but my people do not know the judgments of Yahweh. Now, I have an excerpt. This is from the Deceptions Concerning Yahweh's Calendars of Events. Okay, can we zoom down on this? Well, I just read it. Can y'all see that? Okay, it says, Yahweh created within these named species of birds, which we just read, an order to make them do and observe the justice of Yahweh. He created for the animal world through the instinct he created within them. So he created them instantly to follow the way he is his instructions. Okay, it says, mankind, however, is to observe Yahweh's law. So they have to be taught statutes, judgments through the mind, not the instinct, which Yahweh has given to man, and they must be observed by man's own free choice. It said the swallow, the stork, the turtle dove, the crane observe by instinct the things Yahweh created them to do. Jeremiah says, however, but my people know not the justice of Yahweh. In other words, Jeremiah said, this people will not observe, see, nor do, even though they have been have specific instruction. In other words, they've been commanded. We've been commanded from Yahweh to do so. They surely do not know the justice of Yahweh's every word. And it says, why? Why? Why is this? Because they follow false religious leaders who are not sent by Yahweh. And this is comes. It's broad, is these leaders. It said they follow blind preachers who tell them that Yahweh's law, statutes, and judgments and ordinances are all done away with. Who tell them that they don't really mean anything for us today. Those who observe and do these lies, as well as those who teach others to do them, to observe and do them, will both fall into the ditch. Now, so we are practicing how to become conscious. And let me tell you, there is no other way to exist. No other way. And let me give you an example. Because when you're hungry, the natural desire is to go grab something to eat. but you make a conscious choice. And you say, man, I'm hungry, but I'm not going to eat. To stay away from food, you have to be conscious about it. Now, these simple things are placed in life so we can start doing things more consciously. Do everybody remember when Pastor said, you can't have a full stomach and a full brain at the same time? And if you think about that, if you're hungry, if you stay hungry, you stay thinking. Now, I'm not just talking about food here. I'm talking about being thirsty for the word, for Yahweh's word, his ways. You know, we eat from the tree of life. The way we eat from the tree of life is simply by choices. We choose to come to services. We choose to come to classes, feasts, etc. Now, these are educated choices. Now, if we're not aware of what we're doing, somebody or something will assist you. I guarantee you they will. Now, the concept of cultivating awareness is so that it slowly seeps into your mind. It enhances the quality of your life. And to do this, it takes severe self-discipline. And this is true loving, brother. Abstaining from all forms of indulgence. In the book of Colossians chapter 3. Let's be turning there for your notes, however you want to follow along. You know, Colossians is a book kind of, I always seem to have a little problems finding it. In Colossians chapter 3, verses, we'll be reading from verses 5, 8 through 10. It said, therefore, put to death the evil passions lurking in your member, which are on the earth, fornication, uncleannesses, passions, unholy desires, and all greed and covetousness, which is adultery. These things that we have to starve. Verse 8. You must also put away these from your mouth. Anger, rage, malice, blasphemy, and filthy language. You know, filthy language. I hear that. And I, if you look at the side note here, the filthy language, it says, bad language is offensive to everyone around you. Can you imagine Yahweh allowing such language in his kingdom? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine Yahweh speaking such things? These things, they got to go. But continuing on here, it says, do not lie to one another, since you are putting off the old man and with his practices and are putting on the new man who is being renewed in full knowledge according to the image of him who is creating him. All this stuff got to go. You know, I don't know if you remember, a while ago, Israel said, this is tough stuff, man. Straight and narrow is this way. No getting around it. If you can imagine a straight and narrow path, and it's so straight to where when you walk, your shoulders can't bend it. It's kind of uncomfortable in it. But that's the route we got to take. It's going to be uncomfortable. But it's necessary. It's necessary because if you can maintain awareness in various situations or circumstances in your life, only then will you be capable of parting with the carnal mind. Otherwise, that point never arises in your life. Remember, the blessing is to he who overcomes. In closing, let's return over to Yaakov, chapter 4. Seven through 8. It says, therefore, submit yourself to Yahweh and resist the devil, and she will flee from you. Draw near to Yahweh, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. And you see it's a footnote there by cleanse your hands. And you see what it says over there? Of the world. We have to let it go. Let it go. You know, and making conscious decisions to keep Yahweh's laws, that's what's going to make us in His image and in His likeness. And that's true love. And that's how we let Yahweh know we love Him, brother, by getting rid of this world and all the things that come with it. And with that, I turn it over to the next speaker, Tobias. All right, shalom.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. Please be seated. The peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Well, my brother Deacon Zephaniah, he was in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7, and that's where we're going to go back to page 152. And verse 7 says, "And you must teach them diligently to your children and talk about them when you sit in your house and when you walk on the road and when you lie down and when you rise up." So if you look at R2, R3, R4, E and F, what it's telling us, or basically what we should be able to do, all our conversations should be on the laws of Yahweh. That should be the first thing in our mind, should be the laws. The second thing we should be able to do is, if we're asked about them, we should be able to tell people about them. And the third thing is, we should keep them ourselves. We shouldn't stumble when we're asked about them. We should be able to talk about any portion of the law that we're asked about. So on the Sabbath, we have great sermons, and weekdays are filled with our studies and listening to pastor on the radio. We spend countless hours reading scripture, studying Yahweh's laws, and so on. But when we get together on the Sabbath, what are the things we talk about? Do we talk about keeping Yahweh's laws? Are our conversations on the Sabbath about our love for Yahweh's laws? And about how we enjoy studying them and how much we love to teach them to our families? Our Sabbath conversations are always about great sermons we just heard, right? Hopefully most of our Sabbath conversations will be about the wisdom we receive from the sermon. Why, each week is filled with so many righteous conversations that it's a wonder work gets done, right? The things we talk about during the week are just as important as the things we talk about on the Sabbaths. We should keep all of our conversations lawful. We should carefully think about what we're going to say and about how the things we say will impact others. Our conversations should be leaning towards righteousness and not be used to cause harm to anyone. Nor should we gossip about others. The thoughts we have about ourselves and others should always be positive, so that all of our conversations will always be positive and righteous. We should bless each other, don't curse each other. Turn to page 497, Proverbs 1, verse 33. And it says, "But whoever listens to me, wisdom, will live in safety and will be secure without fear of destruction." What pleases Father Yahweh? Go over to page 832, to Yochanan 15, verse 10. Now Yeshua said here in verse 10, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's laws and abide in his love." Keeping Yahweh's commandments, his laws, pleases him. And here's another one that we should keep in mind. Just go down to verse 12. It says, "This is my commandment, love one another as I have loved you." We study the laws of Yahweh continuously to get understanding so we can begin loving them. We show our love for Yahweh by keeping his laws. We show love for him by loving each other, helping each other, teaching each other, living in peace with each other, and studying together. We come to classes, services, new moon gatherings, and feasts. We love all of those wonderful, righteous building experiences and would not trade them for anything that Satan has to offer. We show our love for Father Yahweh by listening at the feet of the priest, listening to the greatest teacher in the world as he takes the laws of Yahweh and simplifies them for us so we in the world around us can understand them. We get great knowledge from Yahweh, Yeshua, Pastor, the great queens in the house, and others. We take it and apply it in our lives and live uprightly every day. And uprightly means adhering strictly to moral principles. We live upright. We walk upright. Go over to page 447, Psalm 36, verses 7 and 10. Verse 7 says, "How excellent is your great loving kindness, O Yahweh. Therefore we, the children of men, put our trust under the shadow of your wings." And verse 10, it says, "O continue your loving kindness, chesed, to us who know you. O continue your righteousness to the upright in heart." And if you look at G5, he shows who Yahweh's children are. They that know him and live their lives uprightly, strictly adhering to moral principles taught by pastor. We live upright and we walk upright every day. If you go over to page 733 to Matthew 7, verse 21. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Teacher, teacher,' will enter the kingdom of Yahweh, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." In G5, in the margin, he means hirelings and hypocrites would rather serve Yahweh with lip service than with their whole being. Ask yourselves these questions. Do I wholeheartedly love Father Yahweh, the house of Yahweh, all of my brothers and sisters, the laws and the prophets? Am I really trying to bring myself under control? Am I practicing self-control like Pastor Yeshua and Yahweh? We need to look inside of ourselves, search our souls, to make sure we're generally working on overcoming sin. Overcoming should be the most important things in our lives. We should be adjusting our lives daily, changing the things we need to change to become unified, righteous members of Yahweh's family and one with Yahweh. Go over to page 499 and page 500, Proverbs 6, verses 20, 22, and 23. Verse 20, "My son, keep Yahweh's laws, and do not forsake the teaching and instruction in the law, Torah, given by the house of Yahweh." And verse 22, "When you go, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will watch over you. And when you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandments are a lamp, the law is light, and reproofs of instruction are the way to life." Go over to page 966 to 1 Yochanan 3, verse 22. "And whatever we ask, we receive from him, because we keep his laws and do those things that are pleasing in his sight." We are Yahweh's family. We are the only people on this earth that really love Yahweh and continually prove it by devoting our lives to bring peace. We bring peace, Yahweh's laws, love, and so on to each other and to this sin-sick world. I know, sometimes it gets really hard to think about doing the right things when we are tired and hungry. It's hard to keep things in perspective when pain, whether it be mental or physical, overwhelms us. Yes, it's hard to keep our wits about us when Satan pounds on us every day. But when these things occur, we need to put our trust in Yahweh. He will protect us. He will help us. Go to page 515, Proverbs 30, verse 5. And it says, "Every word, every law and prophecy of Yahweh is pure. He is a shield of protection to those who put their trust in him." If we go back to Deuteronomy 6 on page 153, verse 25. "And it will be our righteousness if we observe to do all of this law before Yahweh our Father as he has commanded us." Go three pages over to Deuteronomy 10, verse 12. "And now, O Abel, what does Yahweh your Father require of you? but to reverence Yahweh your Father by walking in His ways, by loving Him, by serving Yahweh your Father with all your heart and with all your soul. We can proclaim our love for Yahweh publicly and then go home to Satan. And what I mean by go home to Satan is that we allow Satan to creep into our lives by not keeping the laws, the house of Yahweh, and everything we're supposed to do in our minds constantly every day. With all our hearts, with all our souls, means 100% of our lives had better be about serving Yahweh, loving Him, walking in His ways 24/7. It doesn't mean any portion of the day should be given over to Satan. All of the day should be given to Father Yahweh. All of the day should be given to righteousness. This means that when we get home, our minds, hearts, everything we think about and do had better be righteous. We can't justify, rationalize anything that would keep us out of the kingdom. We can't make excuses anymore. Turn to page 498, Proverbs 4, verse 22. Take a firm hold on instruction. Do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Father Yahweh is not asking for a lot. He wants us to take His truth, love, laws, and use them to create a righteous way of life that will keep us from dying with the rest of the world. We have a very short time left. We should all be thinking about coming as righteous as we can. We should be so upright that we squeak when we walk. But seriously, we need to get right with Yahweh now. Turn to page 525, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. And let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Reverence Yahweh by observing, keeping His laws, for this is the whole duty of man. And when we reverence means to love, honor, have high esteem for, respect, and so on. Reverence Yahweh every day by keeping His laws and loving Him, by using the day to become a more righteous person, so that we can all be in the kingdom with Father Yahweh. As Pastor says, we don't want to lose anyone. And he has said this over and over and over again. But we need to work on it. We are the ones that have to do the work. He can't do it for us. We need to get it in our minds what we need to do and what we're going to do. We either love Yahweh by keeping the laws and doing what we're supposed to do, or we're not going to be in the kingdom. Let me leave you with this. A man must do without, or a person must do without water until he or she is actually thirsty, before this water will have an excellent taste. So it is with the laws of Yahweh. A man must study the laws of Yahweh continuously, even to the point of becoming weary, before he will truly begin understanding and loving them. So we all know what we're supposed to do. We're all going to start today, this afternoon, and we're going to become righteous members of the house of Yahweh. We're not going to look back in the world or do anything that would stop us, right? Everyone, please stand. Peace to you. Yahweh bless your understanding, and I'll turn it over to the next speaker, Deacon Oniah Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you, great deacon. Shabbat shalom. Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Great Father Yahweh, peace be with each and every one of us here, the family here, and the family viewing. Please be seated. It took me a while to get to that, but I got to it. Okay. I wanted to continue on my sermon, esteeming one another. So the title of this sermon is going to be When We Esteem Others, We Can Bring About a Change. So it'll be Esteeming One Another Part 2. When we esteem others, we can bring about a change. So I wanted to start by rehearsing what esteem means. So I went to the Merriam-Webster Collegiate Dictionary, the 10th edition, which reads, esteem means to have worth and value, judgment, the regard in which one is held, especially in high regards, to set a high value on, to consider. You know, this word consider is to think about carefully, right? You want to really think about your actions carefully. To think of with regard to take some action. To take into account or to regard or treat in an attentive or kindly way. So we turn over to Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3. Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. And we're going to get into some ways of how we could have seen one another and how Yahweh and Yahshua, along with our great overseer, Yezra Hawkins, have shown us the way to esteem one another. So here in Philippians chapter 2, verse 3, let nothing be done by the way of strife or empty glory, but in lowliness of mind, which is humble, being humble in your mind, let each esteem others between lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. Now, there are ways we can esteem others better than ourselves, and I'll give y'all just a few ways that we could do that. I mean, back there, we have, when we enter into Yahweh's house on the south side, we have the first way we can esteem one another is the family members out there that's parking everyone, right, on the Sabbath and the feast days. They get up real early, and they come, and they park us, right? Because sometimes we have trouble doing our parallels and our laterals, so we need a little help in that. And then as you're coming into the sanctuary, you're greeted by the door, right, by the great Shamarims. You know, they have the smile. They greet you. They have the opportunity to wash your hands and your feet, you know, and then they welcome you into Yahweh's house. Sometimes, you know, depending on how great you got together with one another is, you know, a conversation could start. And then you come in, you put your stuff where you're going to be seated, and then you go where? You go and you get your breakfast food in the morning to the men and women concession stands. Or sometimes you just go to the lamplight cafeteria, you know, and we get this great breakfast, right? So those are ways, these people that are serving in these areas, they are learning to esteem others, right? So anyone who want to be a part of that, there's room. So you can get with your counselors, and there's a lot of room. We need the help. Okay, so Father Yahweh, continuing on, Father Yahweh considered his house. He esteemed his house. So please turn over to page 2 in your book of Yahweh. Genesis chapter 2, verses 8 through 9. Actually, this is shown throughout the whole book of Yahweh, but for time's sake, you know, you're going to limit it for time's sake. So Genesis chapter 2, verses 8 through 9, it reads, Yahweh planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man who he had formed. And out of the ground, Yahweh made every tree grow that is pleasant to the sight and desirable for food. The tree of life was in the midst of the garden, and the tree of the knowledge of righteousness and evil was also in the midst of the garden. So here we see, even before that, Yahweh has started esteeming this last day's work, right? So preparing a way for us to in these last days to have a way to come and be a part of his family. So if we turn over to page 43, which is Genesis chapter 49, verses 1 through 10. Genesis chapter 49, verses 1 through 10. And remember, I'm trying to relate how we could esteem one another, and we're going to build up to that. And we're going to see how Yahweh even esteemed his house. He actually esteemed all of the nations, and he esteemed mankind and everything that he have created through, even before it was done. So here in Genesis chapter 49, and it's from verses 1 through 10. So we'll read, I think I have time, I'll go on and read it. Then Yahweh, y'all give me a moment, my eyes is blurring up, so I'm going to need my glasses. They are blurring just slightly. Okay. All right. Then Yaakov called for his sons and said, gather together so I may tell you what will befall you in the last days. Gather together and listen, you sons of Yaakov. Listen to Israel, your father. When I read that sometimes, I really think he's saying, Israel, your father. Listen to Israel, your father. He's talking to us in these last days, but he's talking to them too. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor and exceeding in rank. Turbulent like water, you will no longer excel, for you went up unto your father's bed, unto my couch, and defiled it. Simeon and Levi are brothers, their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter into their council. Let my glory not be joined to their assembly, for in anger they killed a man, and for their pleasure they hamstrung an ox. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them throughout Israel. Yada, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's club. And this Yada, they're talking about this religion that's ruling all the nations right now, the Catholic Church, the Vatican. Oh, Yada, you return from the prey, my son. Like a lion, he crouches and lies down like the lion's breed. Who dares to rouse him? Now, the scepter will not depart from Yada, nor a ruling staff or lawgiver from between his feet, until he comes to whom tribute belongs and the obedience of the nations is his. Now, I was building up to, again, we're talking about esteeming, so I was building up to how Yahweh have esteemed us in these last days through that work right there, because Yahshua is the one that he's talking about. Right? If Yahshua wouldn't have presented himself to do the work that he was assigned to do, then you know, Yisrael Hawkins wouldn't have been about. The house of Yahweh wouldn't have been established in these last days. So that's, again, that's an example of how Yahweh has esteemed us in these last days. But also Yahshua Messiah also considered and esteemed us in these last days' work also. So please be turning over to page 833. That's going to be Yochanan chapter 16. Yochanan chapter 16, verses 5 through 7. To show that Yahshua also esteemed his last days' work. Yochanan chapter 16, verses 5 through 7. Where's the Bible? Okay, so everyone's there? Is everyone's there? Everyone's? Okay, praise Yahweh. But now I go my way to him who sent me, and none of you ask me, where are you going? But because I said these things to you, sorrow has filled your heart. Now again, Yahshua was talking to his disciples, those he was given at that time to, and he was presenting a lot of information about himself and what was going to be done in his last work. However, I tell you the truth, it is to your advantage that I go away. It was to our advantage that he went away also. For if I did not go away, that he did what he was assigned to do, the Comforter would not come to you. Now we found out the other day that the Comforter is Yahweh's laws, statutes, and judgments, and his prophecies, but also that came about through this man, the one sent, Yisrael Hawkins, who works along with Yahshua. I'm sorry, I have a hard time looking up with my glasses on these days. I only could read with them. I can't look up with them. But if I go, I will send Yahweh's Spirit wholly to you. So when Yahshua was able to accomplish what he was foretold to accomplish, then he was able to bring about this last day's work. He was able to bring about Yisrael Hawkins being able to do his work, guiding the family members as generation to generation came about. So, I got you can read up the fifth. Okay, I'm going to continue reading a little bit. No, I'm going to move on. So for time's sake, y'all could go up to read to verse 15. I read up to verse 15 and I see where it related to what I was trying to relay out to everybody. So I wanted to find out, I had questions in my mind. I wanted to find out the effect of negative behavior on mankind. We know what the Peaceful Solution Catholic Education teaches us, what negative attention, negative effects do, you know. But there is proof through scientific research that also showing what take place when we choose to do negative instead of positive interaction. So here, there was an article that came out on the fifth month, Roman month, on the 12th date in the year of 2016. The article came about at 5:05 in the morning, and it was from Nature World News. And the title of the article was Five Ways Bullying Can Be Damaging to Kids' Physical Health. So I kind of changed it up a little bit. Five ways bullying can be changed, can be damaging to mankind's physical health. So bullying can lead to serious health problems, and it's time to recognize this, says the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine in a report released just recently. Now, we need to understand that this is a public health food health problem faced by a third of our children. Now, we know that it is faced by more than a third of our children. It's actually faced by everyone. You know, we have the children bullying the children. We have toddlers bullying the toddlers, and they also bully the moms and the dads. I have a little story. Just what occurred to me this week was one of the young men that I'm serving during the week at the job that I have. He's a married man, and he had to leave work. He had to leave work early. So he came to me and he said, "I got to leave work early because I lost my babysitter." And he went into details about how he lost his babysitter. He said, "My 2-year-old is beating up my babysitter's toddler, and he's hitting the babysitter." I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah, you should go and take care of that, you know." So, you know, it's a 2-year-old, you know. So we see that bullying starts from a very young age, you know. But we can also see that here in the peace in the house of Yahweh, that Pastor gave us so many tools. So that we could overcome that, you know, and teach our children to overcome that. But you know, first it got to start with you as the individual. You know, you have to be willing to change, and then we could bring our children along. But continuing on, he read. This is Dr. Frederick Rivera. He's a committee chairman who helped compile that report. He also said, unfortunately, zero tolerance policies in schools wherein students are automatically suspended on the grounds of bullying are no longer effective in reducing cases of bullying. But we know actually it's never been effective, you know. They put it like it's working. When you put somebody in detention or you send them to the principal office and the principal do his threats and nobody have a solution, right? Sometimes they'll call the parents will come in, and the parents is arguing with the principal. Why are you picking on my son? You know, or my daughter, you know. So that's what they have today. But we know that never worked. You know, it never worked. Actually, what it starts reform school. It starts going to in and out of the jail. I could go to jail. I've been in prison before. The incarceration, it starts for that son or that daughter, that individual. They start to get into the system, right? That's what that starts when you start taking them, incarcerating them, or putting them on the side of what you want to call detention. It's only going to cause the effect of them starting up with that, you know. And we know that never worked, you know. So the question is, what can be done to help us esteem ourselves and others, right? Yahweh has inspired the lamplight teaching through our teacher, Israel Hawkins. And, we get the opportunity to see it we get the opportunity to see it during the new moons, on the feast days, you know, and it's a awesome thing. It's a change of life. It can help the parents to see the benefit of it, and if they see the benefit of it, then they would encourage the children also to see the benefit of it. Now, Pastor has been begging us to get involved in our children's education. So, brothers and sisters, Pastor has shown us our children will be educated either in the way of peace or in the way of what we're seeing today. So, the two-year-old slapping everybody, hitting everybody. That's what we see today. So, start today. Okay? Everybody, let's just start today. Let's start over. Day one. Let's make up our minds to accept the teachings from Yahweh's house. Start fully putting them to use in our day-to-day interactions so we can teach our children how to make negative choices. When the adults make the choices to change, our children will see the great benefits of positive interaction. I had a song, but I don't have time for it. Praise Yahweh. I'm not going to go over. Okay, and with that, I would like to introduce a great deacon in Yahweh's house. I've been having the opportunity to serve with this deacon for some time. When y'all get the opportunity to come to the men concession stand, y'all see this deacon? He's a great one. I'm telling y'all, he could get you to laugh at any moment, too. The great deacon, will everybody please stand? The great deacon, Samuel Askin Hawkins. Praise Yahweh.
Shabbat Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. Appreciate that great intro. Now I've got to live up to it. Let the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I have a few quotes here to start off. And these are, well, let's talk about love. These are all regarding Yahweh's great plan, Yahweh's great laws of love, and love is an action. Koshak is what Pastor has done a great sermon on before, and just paraphrasing it, it's coming to know and love the laws and the plan of Yahweh and wanting to share that with someone else. And from the Song of Songs, your love is better than sweet wine. And so, seek first the kingdom of Yahweh and His righteousness, His laws of love. And Yahweh's going to add all these things to us. So, my own quote is that Yahweh's laws of love are a perfect circle of unity. So, a circle is something Pastor has recently mentioned with telling you to get a compass out and try to draw a circle. A circle has no beginning and no end, so it's literally infinite. It is the only way for a single line to enclose any space. And it's in unity. It's a great symbol of unity because every single point on that circle revolves around and is equally distant from the center. They're all in unity all the way around from the center point. So let's start with the greatest of the commandments, which is love Yahweh, your Father, with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. This is Deuteronomy 6:5. And heart, soul, and might, it's easy to read over those and just think you know what those mean. And so I took a little time and looked them up in Strong's. With all your heart, just a preview. So with all your heart is the inner person, the seat of thought and emotion. With all of your soul is, think of that as the breath of life. Think of it as your whole self. And with all your might, which is a marker of great degree. So word number 3824 is heart. And by extension, the inner person. And when you see inner person, think about innermost self, your innermost being, your most intimate inside thoughts. The seat of thought and emotion, conscience, courage, mind, and understanding. So love Yahweh with all of your inner person.
all of your thought, the seat of your thought and emotion. And it comes from word number 3825, which is also could be a physical organ, but figuratively, it's the inner person that thinks, feels, and chooses. It's almost like James Strong took that right out of the Peaceful Solution. It's the mind, the heart, and the will. So let's look at the word soul, which is 5315, and it means breath, and by extension, it means life or life force. Think of the breath of life. It also means soul and the immaterial part of a person. And when you think of something that is immaterial, think of the sermons that have been brought out recently about the heart and how it flows out in electromagnetic waves and it sends signals out and receives signals from other people. That's what it's talking about right there, the immaterial part of a person, the seat of emotion and desire, and a creature or person as a whole self or body. And now 5315 is soul. That's what we just talked about. And it comes from 5314, which means to be refreshed. Refresh oneself and refreshing. And immediately I thought of Acts 3:18 on that. If you turn there, we'll read that once more. Repent, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, that times of refreshing may come from the presence of Yahweh. And so this word soul, you want to closely link that up with conversion. Love Yahweh with all your heart, which is the inner person. Love Yahweh with all of your soul, which is the whole person, closely related to conversion. And with all your might, which is word number 3966. And it's a marker of great degree or quantity. Very greatly, exceedingly much, very greatly, utterly. Ask never so much, diligent, and wax louder and louder. So you can see this is something that you've got to put effort into, and it will grow, this love that Yahweh wants you to have. And so I recently listened in preparation for this to a really great sermon called Koshak. I've heard it said Koshak or Koshak. I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce it, but it's the most important kind of love. And this is what Pastor did a while ago. I'm not sure how long ago, but if you listen to it, you'll see that his accent is much more pronounced than it is today. So it's been a few years. And it's the love that grows between a person and another person, or it's the love that grows between a person and Yahweh. Pastor describes it as a longing for another person. And it's not sexual. It's the desire to share with them, like the desire to share Yahweh's name and Yahweh's Sabbath days. An example of this love, this koshak, is the love that David had for Jonathan. Both of them shared a great love and desire for Yahweh's plan. But notice even more, David had a love for King Shaul as well, who the great King Shaul spent a lot of his time literally chasing down, hunting for David and trying to kill him. But even when David had the opportunity to strike back, he refused. David loved Yahweh's plan and his anointed and the order Yahweh had set in place. Now, there are two spirits working in the world today, working in the people of the world. One is the spirit of Yahweh, which is love, this koshak. And the other one is Satan's spirit, which is disunity and hatred and confusion. Satan's spirit is symbolized as a tree of mixture, a tree of confusion. And Satan's teaching is symbolized as those fruits. And all of this is set in the midst of man, in the garden of Yahweh, in chapter 3 of Genesis. And so the spirit of Satan is to go out and get yours, gain, get more, accumulate, acquire, go, go, go. You end up with so much stuff that it owns you. You end up becoming a slave to your stuff, whether it's money or houses, vehicles, even dogs cattle, sheep, goats. Pastor tells a story of a lady who had butterfly figurines all over her house. And she had to spend so much time cleaning and dusting and arranging these so that they looked just right, that they became a burden to her life. They overtook her life. Love is not found in material things, and true love is not finding another person to make you happy or joyful, as we would say in the house of Yahweh. True love is when you have joy and when you want to share it with someone else. True love overrules fear, lust, hatred, abuse. It's the most important kind of love. No things and no other person is going to make you joyful. It's got to come from Yahweh and your own self. Praise Yahweh. See, nobody else is going to make you joyful, but someone else can make you quite miserable if you do not have this joy, this koshak, that you need before you ever become involved with a mate. Without finding first joy and love in yourself and in your relationship with Yahweh, you can end up, it can be miserable. It can be misery and a mess of a relationship. So, redeem the time. Find joy in study. Strive to find those quiet moments of reflection. And also look for those goosebump moments of inspiration and learning and growing. Find your peace in Yahweh. Be thankful for the things you do have right now. And be okay with the person you are right now. Love yourself and like yourself. It's not that you walk around going, "Oh, I'm so great." It's not what I'm saying. I like myself because I've made the decision to become perfect. That is why I like all of you as well. Now, some days are better than others. And let's look at 1 Corinthians 13 for just a minute. Some days are better than others. You can count on ups and downs, right? In 1 Corinthians, it's 13, verse 4. Love is patient, and love is kind. Love is not jealous, not boastful, not puffed up with pride. So it's not huffy and puffy, right? It does not behave rudely, but we're all faced with situations where someone else is being rude to us. You have to prepare for that in advance. I heard a comedian one time give the advice. He did a kid's show, and he said when somebody comes up and he says something rude and they're trying to get a rise up out of you, you just smile, look back at them, and go, "So?" Because what they're saying to you, just because they said it out loud, doesn't make it true. You don't have to agree with them. So love does not behave rudely. It does not seek its own advantage. And I think that's something that we should point out. You know, a lot of times you may think that someone is giving you advice or giving you counseling, and they're trying to do that for their own advantage. That's not the case. What they're doing is they're giving you counsel and advice in the laws of Yahweh for your advantage. It's the benefit of you, and it's not to build anyone else up except you as a person in the laws of Yahweh in love. So remember that when you're getting correction. Love is not provoked, become worked up in irritation. And you know, as I was practicing this particular speech right here, I got a call and with some terrible news. And once I found out that everybody was okay, I yelled and screamed. And I had to go back and have a talk with Yahweh and say, you know, thanks for pointing that out to me. How quickly I can forget. But it's not provoked. Doesn't become worked up in irritation. And it thinks no evil. does not rejoice in iniquity, the putting away of the laws of Yahweh, but rejoices in the truth, the laws of Yahweh. It does not betray, it believes all things in Yahweh, hopes all things in Yahweh, endures all things in Yahweh. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will be fulfilled. Where there are languages, they will cease. And where there is knowledge, it will be replaced by complete truth. And that complete truth, think of that as the complete person, the whole person that I mentioned earlier when we were identifying the word soul. And so, find your peace in Yahweh. Seek first the kingdom, Yahweh's ruling government, and then you will have something to share with someone else. Love is not finding someone to make you happy or joyful. Love is finding the kingdom of Yahweh, the Yahwehness, and wanting to share that with someone else. This is true love. So, I really appreciate it. I'd like to turn it over to the next speaker, a great worker in Yahweh's house, the great deacon, Aaron DeFrades.
Shalom, family of Yahweh. Okay, said my name, Deacon Aaron Hawkins, and I'm here to talk to y'all about the love of Yahweh. Y'all may be seated. You know, when I think of the love of Yahweh, I think of you. Because I wasn't born in the house of Yahweh, and there was others who did the work so that I could find out about the house of Yahweh and find out the era of my doings. And when I found out about the love of Yahweh, I realized that the love of Yahweh is a wonderful thing. You know, because the love of Yahweh is something that when you understand this love, it's something you want to look, you want to go after, you seek it out, you sort out this love. You know, plenty of people in the world, even the elect, you know, and you know who I'm talking about, the one who we look up to and we have all respect for because he showed this love to us, you know, he saw it in the scriptures. He saw it in the scriptures. Most men use the scriptures to make money, but when you use the scriptures to better the life of other people, that is true love. It says here, you know, I'll clap to that. The love of Yahweh, it says, loving Yahweh, the love of Yahweh, loving Yahweh is righteousness. That's keeping the law. You keep the law when you're loving Yahweh. Now, the love of Yahweh, that's what occurs when you practice the law, and now you start taking on the character of Yahweh. You start seeing the benefits in what Father Yahweh done for us, and now you start practicing that love of Yahweh. And that's what we do. It's the way we treat one another. You know, it's the way we wake up in the night and we worry about what we got to do next day and how we could serve in the work of Yahweh and become a blessing to others. You know, and for those who listening, for all of those who paying attention, you know, do we earnestly love and care for one another? This question should get us thinking. If we feel we're slackening a little bit, you know, sometimes we slacken, you know. Well, everyone here, everyone tuned in, we're listening and we're learning. And we're learning how to love one another and we're learning how to genuinely take on that love of Yahweh. You know, okay, you know, the love of Yahweh is not to, it's not to oppress one another. It's not to herd each other in, you know, it's not to take advantage of anyone, to herd men in like cattle so that you could build a city out of men. Maybe when you build that city like Cush did, you build Nimrod that could create Babylon, that could create a city where you could just make a lot of profit off of it. It says, no, the love of Yahweh is doing unto others what you don't like Okay, is the love of Yahweh, this is a question to you, is the love of Yahweh doing unto others what you don't like being done unto you? You don't have to answer that right now, but think about it. If you don't like it being done unto you, is that showing the love of Yahweh? Would you do it unto others? And we're here so blessed learning that. We're learning that. That's not what the world is learning. It says the love of Yahweh is applying Yahweh to everything you do, everything you say, everything you eat, everything you wear, everything you listen to, because these things influence us to make choices. Every place you go, because you could say you love Yahweh, but then you get yourself found in all the wrong places. It's what you do when you lay down. It's what you do when you rise up. I know everybody remember that scripture. That scripture, I think the first speaker spoke it. He talked about Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7. That's on page 152 of your book of Yahweh. For all those who have a book of Yahweh, the King James Version basically say the same thing. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7, it says, and you must, it goes back to the R2, it says you should be familiar with it, and it should be in your mouth. You must. That's a command. And you must. And now, this is the part that really shows the love of Yahweh. Teach them diligently to your children. If you love one another and you love your children, you teach it diligently to your children. And yet, and the side note says here, and I'll go back to the side note that talk about teach, the E, it's word number 8150 in the Hebrew dictionary, Strong's Exalted Concordance, means to teach words, verses, laws, you know, so that you can get somebody to start practicing it. To your children. Now, our tree, it says, these are not one's own family. It's everyone you come in contact with. If you really love the people you come in contact with, if you have that love of Yahweh, you would teach them. In your words, your deeds, your example. Your example. You know, most of the times we don't pay attention to our example. And one time I was correcting a child. You know, I was like, man, you shouldn't be saying those words. And then I say the words. You know, you shouldn't be saying that. And then I say it. Because you get me so upset when I see you saying it. But I'm teaching. We lead by example. Now, it says here, and talk about them. And talk about them when you sit in your house. If we go back down here to talk, it says F. If we find F in the side note, it says it's word 6196 in Hebrew dictionary, Strong's Exalted Concordance, means to talk, to direct a person or persons with the purpose of bringing them to order or to a way of life. If you could see the benefits in keeping the laws of Yahweh, then you should see the benefits in displaying the love of Yahweh. Teach the laws with intent to getting someone to follow. With intent to getting someone to follow. And that's where it comes with the teaching and talking about it. Not just when the situation come up. We went through the whole, I hope we don't think, well, we went through the whole lamplight thing. Oh, that was just a phase. That was just a phase of the house of Yahweh. That was just a phase. We was just doing that for the feast. You know, we don't need to talk to our children. You know, you don't have to have the lamplight going on there to start a conversation. Hey, young man, you hear about the news? Yeah, no. What do y'all say? I always say about that. Well, this right here, you know, and that is something that we should always make a strong part of our everyday interaction, talking to one another about the great blessing that Yahweh's law filed for us. It shouldn't be secondary to us. Oh yeah, that's something we only do on the Sabbaths. You only have to have that behavior at the feast, you know. But when we go back out to the world. When in Rome, do as the Romans do, which is not, it's not the way of Yahweh. You must become an example. Be an example of righteousness. Okay, we're going on to, we finish the scripture. It says, and when you lie down and when you rise up. Now go to 1 Kefa First Kefa 3 and verse 15 on page 959. And I got smart and marked the book a little bit. Usually I don't do that. And then I'm lost. But, okay. First Kefa 3:15, it says, but sanctify Yahweh. How do you sanctify Yahweh? Well, look to the side note. Make it a goal to be like him. To be like Yahweh, become a servant to one another. And that is showing the true love of Yahweh. Because we could say, well, Yahweh will come down and deal with that situation right there. That's not for me. That's too dirty. I'm not doing that. I have the love of Yahweh, but I'm not humbling myself to do that. Not that. Well, let me go to the first book of Israel. First book of Israel, chapter 19. Verse 40, that's on page 154. First book of Israel is the going on to perfect. No, it's the making a connection. Making a connection with Yahweh. On page 154, verse 40, it says here, give me 1 second. Okay. It says, remember the laws of Yahweh. The laws of Yahweh is the love of Yahweh. That's the love that he wants to create in you. You know, that's the love that Yahweh wants to create in you. And on page 155, Pastor goes into explaining this. He said, he says, you wouldn't partake in this particular sin because the law is diligently taught to you and you know the curses that comes with that sin. Though it may seem feel great, you know, they say stolen sugar tastes sweet, but if you know what comes with the sin, you know I'm not gonna do that, I'm gonna avoid that. And you also talk about eating salt. You know that eating salt is healthy because the scripture says so, and that's some benefits of the scriptures. Then you know about eating honey because the scripture says so, that's the law. And even the scientists backed that up. Yahweh said it and the scientists backed it up. Titus 2 and verse 11, and that is on page 141, page 941 of your book of Yahweh. Says here, 11, for the love of Yahweh that brings salvation has appeared to all men. Which one of us here haven't heard of the Peaceful Solution character education program? Anybody? Haven't heard about it, never encountered it, never seen it. Nobody put their hand up. I was expecting that. Number 12, verse 12. Teaching us that by denying unholiness, because when we deny unholiness, it's to our benefit. Father Yahweh said, become holy. Take on his character, and that's to our benefit. So we could live long. So we could have health in our bones and nourishments in our flesh, you know, so that we could live. It's not so that anybody else could live. Denying unholiness and worldly lust, we must live soberly, righteously, and in holiness in this present world. And also in the cyber world. You know, we can't be liking different things and promoting different things that is not according to the law. You know, when we go on with different social media sites and stuff. Well, I don't support it. I mean, I just like it. I mean, it caught my attention and I like it. I just like it. You know. Let's go to 1 Yochanan 3. No, 1 Yochanan 5, 1 to 3. 1 Yochanan 5, 1 to 3 on page 966. Whoever believes that Yahshua is the Messiah is begotten of Yahweh. And everyone who loves him who begot, he also loves him who is begotten by him. Which is also talking about Yahshua, but also us who is begotten by Israel Hawkins. It says here, by this we know that we love the children of Yahweh when we love Yahweh by keeping his laws. Verse 3, For this is the love of Yahweh, that we keep his laws, and his laws is not grievous. Anybody here know one law that is grievous? The word grievous means burdensome. You know, it's hard. It's just really rough to... Anybody? No hands? Not even one hand? Well, I guess the work of Yahweh going to get done a whole lot faster. We in unity. Praise Yahweh. Yahweh's laws are even merciful to the ones who break the law. We know that. Right? We all know that. Because we get warned. We get taught diligently over and over, week after week. Anybody who ever get in trouble in the house, you know, break a law and get corrected. Not trouble, but corrected. You know, you get corrected. We know that. There's always a way to redeem yourself. Always a way to get right. To get back on track. It says here, and I'll quote from the Going On to Perfection series, number one. This is something Pastor was talking about. You know, he said the world loved their own. They stand strong for their own. They say we're lacking that. And that was in 1992 he gave that sermon. He said we're lacking that. We need to be getting closely knitted or we won't make it. And I think, as Pastor said, we're 99% there, 99.9. You know, we're real close. But we must always make sure and represent Yahweh in everything that we do. And when we make a mistake, quickly acknowledge it, repent, confess, and move on. And that is showing the love of Yahweh. We can't have the love of Yahweh and keep tearing down one another. We can't have wicked suspicions towards each other. But something had to be going on because, you know, something's going on there. Because I don't know what's going on, so something's going on. We had that problem for years within the surrounding area. They accused us of all kinds of stuff because they didn't know what's going on. But would they come and humble themselves to learn? No, they just sit there and accuse. You know, and it's something we must remember. There's no love without keeping the laws of Yahweh. There's no love. You can't say, well, I have love, but I just can't humble myself to those laws. I have all this love to share, but you see that one thing right there? Not for me. Not for me. No, 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 no. That's not for me. He will not talk to me like a child. Because I am free, white, and 21. I like that. Every time he said it, I remember it. Keep coming back. It says here, well, this is my notes. You know, brothers, sisters, fellow workers in the work of Yahweh, remember we in the last time of trouble. And now is our conduct have to be according to the law. We have to walk circumspectly and be ready in season, out of season for when we're called upon. Now this time, because it is the time, I get to introduce somebody I look up to. I wouldn't say that part, but he's like a brother to me, a dear friend, somebody I admire a lot, and he puts up with me and my shortcomings. So with that, I'd like to hand the lectern over, the podium, to the great Kahan and my friend, the great Kahan, Matitya Hawkins.
Praise Yahweh, Shabbat Shalom. Please be seated. Yahweh's peace be with each and every one of you. Shalom, great saints of Yahweh. I think he prepared that introduction for a different speaker, but they must have got the speaking lineup wrong. Yahweh's peace be with you. As we look in the world today and the things we see on the news, when we watch the news and if we have to deal with society, we can see in today's world how it's in the exact prophetic time period of the last days, or as Yeshua referred to it, the end of days. If you be turning over to page 470 in your book of Yahweh, to Psalms chapter 91. When we see these things coming to pass in the world, it should bring us a joy, and we should have a sense of easement, knowing that Yahweh has prophesied this destruction to come upon mankind. And the closer mankind brings themselves to destruction, the closer sinners get to destroying sinners, the closer we are to being able to bring in Yahweh's great kingdom, to be able to establish the kingdom on earth, and to bring peace to the universe. In Psalms chapter 91 and verses 1 and 2, starting off in verses 1 and 2, it reads, "He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High will abide under the shadow of the Almighty. We say to Yahweh, you are a refuge, our fortress, you are our Father, in you we will trust." The word secret place there in verse 1, Pastor put in the side note there, that's the protected place. The protected place, Micaiah chapter 4 verse 1 and Isaiah chapter 2 verse 2, that this protected place would be established in the chief of the nations. The great house of Yahweh, which we know was established in 1983 here in Abilene, Texas, or Abilene, Texas as we call it, here at the great Rock of Abel. And this message of peace is going forth, which is the shadow. These teachings are the shadow, as you see in the side note of verse 1 where it says shadow. Side note C, it says, "These are my feast, and my reward for keeping them is my protection." So Yahweh's shadow is his feast. You know, and if we think about what we experience at the feast, we experience the great teachings and the instructions and knowledge so that we would be able to be protected from the things which are coming upon mankind. We're taught how to come out of the world and be separate from the uncleanness so that we don't defile our bodies and bring our bodies down. And we're taught preparations to make in surviving the great destructions that are coming upon mankind. In Psalms chapter 91, verse 4 through 6, it reads, "He will cover you with his feathers." And Pastor talked about those feathers being his talit, abiding under, it's the Hebrew word wings, or talit, abiding under the protection of Yahweh. "Yahweh will cover you with his talit, and under his wings will you trust. His truth will be your shield and buckler. You will not be afraid of the terror of night, nor of the arrow that flies by day." You know, and there's a great deal of uncertainty in today's society of what might take place. You know, it takes place in the shopping centers, in the schools, you know, the movie theaters, when people are on vacations and their different areas that they go to. You know, there's a great deal of terror in the world, not knowing what could take place or if they could be in a place where these things can take place. You know, and these what they call mass shootings, you know, these mass shootings and these groups of killings, which do take a lot of lives and compared to just single, you know, homicides or murders or, you know, car accident deaths. But these are small groups of death compared to what has been prophesied, the great destruction that'll come, where the sun's going to be darkened, where they're going to use these nuclear weapons, which is actually going to wipe out 4/5 of the earth's population, you know, which will be upwards in the 6 to 8 billion range of people that will be killed from these destructions. "But you will not be afraid of the terror of night, nor of the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that wastes at noonday." And they set the atomic, they call it the Armageddon clock, or the atomic clock. They have it set 2 minutes towards midnight. You know, they consider midnight or that time period of being when these wars will come. And they're just, because of the different decision makings by world leaders and different actions that are taking place and the push that's being put upon these nations to worship Mother Mary, because of these things heating up, the different nations are making these threats, you know, these open and blatant threats with words and with actions. And so therefore it causes a great deal of uncertainty, you know, so they feel that we're that much closer. And here recently, you know, in the news and the different articles coming forth from the news, a lot of the talk is about nuclear weapons being used in nuclear war and who would survive in these things. In Psalms 91, verse 8 through 10, "Only with your eyes you will look and you will see the reward of the wicked." So Yahweh offers us protection. You know, this is the title of my sermon, that we abide under Yahweh's shelter. We have this protection of Yahweh because we abide under this shelter. "Only with your eyes you will look and you will see the reward of the wicked, because you have made Yahweh your refuge, because you have made the Most High your house, the house of Yahweh." So Yahweh's house, you know, it has to be something that we make the teachings and the instructions that we receive from Yahweh's house, we have to make them a part of us. It's not just a place or a building that we dwell in, as Pastor spoke of. It's a body of people. We have to be in unity with Yahweh's house. This is our protection. This is what will keep us free from this defilement and this death that's coming upon mankind. No evil will befall you, nor will any plague come near your dwelling. And we've seen in the history of the scriptures, we've seen many times where Yahweh protects his people. You know, we've seen that when his sons and his daughters are obedient to the instructions given, then they receive that protection that comes. Now here quickly, in the Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the word shadow means shelter from danger. Shelter from danger. And then the Merriam-Webster's, the word shelter, it means something that covers or affords protection, an establishment, providing food and shelter. You know, like the house of Yahweh was established in these last days. An establishment, a place that's providing food and shelter. The word shelter also means a position or the state of being covered and protected, to protect. So having shelter from these things to come, it has to be a form of protection. Now if you turn over here to page 752 in the book of Matthias, page 752 in the book of Matthias chapter 24, Yeshua showed about the wars that are coming, how bad they would be. You know, basically giving a warning, and this is something pastors have been bringing to the nations for many years now, giving a warning of that you will not survive these things unless you repent and turn to Yahweh. You have to have Yahweh's shadow of protection or the shelter that comes from Yahweh. You have to have that covering because there's no man-made covering for the destructions that are coming upon mankind. In Matthew chapter 24, verses 21 and 22, he says, "For then will be great tribulation, such as not come to pass since the beginning of the world to this time, no nor ever will be. And unless those days would shorten, unless those days were shortened, there would no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake those days will be shortened." So a time of tribulation, a time of destruction that was so bad that unless it was shortened, no one would survive. No flesh would be saved. But of course, for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. And then in verse 29, he talks about this tribulation of these days. The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give her light. You know, this is referring to the nuclear weapons that have only been invented in this last generation and have only been around now for, you know, 70 plus years here and only have been used once in a war. In the World War II in the 40s. And these are the bombs that they've created, you know, many, many times greater than those ones that they used in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. For your notes, if you write down a Revelations chapter 11, verse 18, Revelations 11, 18, for the sake of time, I'm just going to quote it. It refers to the nations being angry and Yahweh's judgment coming. You know, and the judgment that Yahweh has is that sinners will be allowed to destroy sinners. That they can go their way, but they're going to have to accept their reward of their wickedness. So we see the nations are angry today. Even individuals that are, you know, leaders and representatives of the nations today, even they recognize the warmongering mentality of today's governments and the lack of safety for mankind. I have a short clip here. It was a part video from the one of the debates here on Romans 7:31, 2019. And there's a congresswoman from Hawaii, and she's talking about the reality of what takes place when these weapons are used and how there is no protection from these things. And then there's a short news clip after she speaks showing what she referred to about what took place in Hawaii last year about where they thought that they were going to be under attack from a nuclear missile. So at this time, if you could please play my news clip.
Now, as we stand here tonight, there are thousands of nuclear missiles pointed at us. And if we were to get an attack right here tonight, we would have 30 minutes before we were hit. And you would receive an alert like the one we received in Hawaii last year that would say, "Incoming missile, seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill." And you would see, as we did, as my loved ones in Hawaii did, there is no shelter. This is the warmonger's hoax. There is no shelter. It's all a lie.
Now to those tense moments for residents and tourists in the Hawaiian Islands today. A false emergency alert about a ballistic missile threat had people running for cover. Our Matt Daugherty spoke with one of our own colleagues whose family was caught in the chaos this morning.
And then, you know, you hear that sound, that Amber Alert sound, that sound we all heard during Harvey, when Harvey hit, flash flooding, that, like, hey, there's something going on. And so we looked at our phone, and it was, hey, there's a missile approaching.
Soon after, the emergency alert was sent to everyone on the island. Frantic locals and tourists scrambled for shelter. As far as they knew, they might only have minutes left to live.
First, I thought it was a false alarm. You know, I thought it was a test or something, but then right underneath it said, this is not a test. Seek shelter. And so, you know, we're freaking out a little bit because North Korea isn't that far away, and we're thinking anything's possible.
I just wanted to know that I love you guys.
Gathered among the other frightened guests, unsure if this was it, the day Kim Jong-un pushed the button.
It's pretty scary to everyone here. You know, everyone's here and, you know, enjoying a great vacation, or if they, you know, you live on Hawaii and, you know that this threat is possible, and to have it happen like that and to be a test, it's crazy. It's scary to everybody.
There is no shelter. This is the warmonger's hoax. There is no shelter. It's all a lie.
Praise God. So you can see that even in the world today, they're getting wake-up calls, and they're seeing signs that their system is falling and they have no protection from the things that are coming upon them. If you be turning over to Colossians on page 926 in Colossians chapter 2, in Colossians chapter 2, we'll read that here shortly. First, I want to read to you, if you write down your notes, it's from the third book of Yisrael, chapter 8. The third book of Yisrael, chapter 8, and verse 41 through 43. This is a sermon pastor gave on 7/3/2004. And he shows the shelter or the shadow of protection, what it comes from. The shadow of life only comes from keeping Yahweh's laws. And in verse 41 of the third book of Yisrael, chapter 8, pastor says, surely my Sabbaths you shall keep, for they are a sign. And this is, he's reading in Exodus 31:13. Remember this word sign here. It's shown throughout the Holy Scriptures, but under different words. It's a sign between me and you throughout your generations, or throughout all the generations, including the last generation that we're in right now. This is the last generation that Yahweh said would not pass away until all these things are fulfilled. And continuing here, he's reading in Exodus 31:13, that you may know that I am Yahweh who sanctifies you. There are two words I want to go over here today, pastor says, the word sanctifies and the word sign. I want you to understand these things thoroughly, because there is a shadow of death over this land, and there is also a shadow of life being offered to you. Remember what we read in Colossians about these being a shadow for you. They're a shadow of protection, actually, if you do the whole thing. We'll see that, too, in just a little bit. So we see Yahweh's shadow of protection comes from keeping his Sabbaths and his feast days. In Colossians chapter 2, verses 16 through 17, it says, therefore, let no man condemn you for doing these things, eating and drinking in the observance of a feast day or of a new moon or of the Sabbath day, which are a shadow from things to come for the body of Messiah. Okay, so this shadow comes from keeping these Sabbaths and these feasts. And for your notes, if you write down Jeremiah chapter 23, Jeremiah 23 verses 5 through 8, I'm going to be reading it from the latest Prophetic Word magazine, the 2019 issue of the Prophetic Word magazine. In Jeremiah chapter 23 in verse 5, it says, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will raise up a beloved righteous branch, and the messenger whom I have sent to be my messenger thus shall succeed and will execute justice and judgment in the earth. In his days, those who reverence Yahweh will be saved, those who are keeping Yahweh's laws, who are called by Yahweh's name. And the called out ones will dwell in safety. And this is the name that he will proclaim to them at Abel, Yahweh Zikanu, Yahweh our righteousness. Therefore, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that they will no longer say, as surely as Yahweh lives who brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But they will say, as surely as Yahweh lives, who brought up and led the seed of the house of Israel into the protected place at Abel and from all countries where they had been driven, and they will dwell in their own land. So we see here that Yahweh's protection is offered to those who repent of sin and keep Yahweh's laws. That's the only shadow or shelter from these nuclear destructions. There's not going to be no protection for those who are part of these systems, because these systems were created to fail. Yet Yahweh prophesied these things because they turned from his laws, they turned to sin. Their sin has built up to this peak to where now they're going to destroy all the earth's inhabitants. And for your notes in closing, in Psalm 91, 14 and 15, Yahweh says, "Because you have set your love upon me, I will deliver you, cause you to escape. I will set you on high because you know my name." May Yahweh bless you, brothers and sisters. May you have a great Sabbath day. If you all please stand. And I have the great privilege and honor to introduce the great Kohen Yochanan Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. Yahweh's peace be with each and every one of you. I'd like to start by opening up to Genesis chapter 5, chapter 15, I'm sorry. Genesis chapter 15. And notice what Yahweh says to one of our forefathers. "After these things, the word of Yahweh came to Abram in a vision, saying, 'Fear not, Abram, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great.'" Down to verse 5. "He took him outside and said, 'Look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them.' And he said to him, 'So shall these become the possession of your seed.'" Brothers and sisters, we are the seed of Abraham. And right here, this promise is to us. But I am hoping that after today, you cannot look up into the heavens and see the stars the same way you always have. I'm hoping after today, everything looks different to you. In Psalm 19, verse 1, "Heaven's messengers proclaim the glory of Yahweh, and the expanse of the sky declares the works of his hands." Verse 4, "Their witness goes out through all the earth, and their story to the end of the world." You may remember there's a day when it was pointed out that this word "world" can also refer to the whole universe. "In them he has set up a house for the light." And that house, of course, you're in it right now. A house that points out all the things, all the glory that Yahweh put into this universe that we live in. As a matter of fact, he's got plans for this universe. If you turn back just two or three pages to Psalm 8, "How excellent is your great name in all the earth, Yahweh, our sovereign. You have your glory firmly set above the starry frame," or the heavens. Verse 3, "When we consider your heavens, the work your fingers framed, the work of the moon and the stars, which were by you ordained." Verse 6, "You made man to be ruler over the works of your hands," over these same stars that he first told Abram to look at and count them, that he's giving to his seed, to us in these last days. "You will put all things under the house of Yahweh at Abel." Verse 9, "How excellent is your great name in all the earth, Yahweh, sovereign of the world." We have recently been told that our heart, and if you haven't figured it out yet, this is a continuation of the heart is so much more than a blood pump. Our heart generates a magnetic field I'm going to say an electromagnetic field, and there's more to it than that even. But our heart generates a magnetic field that reaches all around our bodies, but it even goes far beyond our own bodies. It reaches into the entire universe. But you can't see it. You can't see a magnetic field. Well, at this point, you cannot see anything there except the piece of paper that's sitting on the little display. However, if you want to see the magnetic field, you have to add something to it. And in this case, I've got some iron filings, which will make the magnetic field become apparent. Is anyone having any trouble seeing that? You can see it's very obvious to see the lines that the little pieces of iron line up with all the way around. And can we zoom in?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. You know, what was invisible at first is now very easy to see. Now, we'll take that out of there. We've got two sets of magnets now. Now, we've got two sets of magnets, and we're going to see that those two sets of magnets, even though, as you can see, they're not touching each other, but is it fair to say that they're still connected through the magnetic field? Because one of the magnets is way up here, one of the magnets is way down here, but there's obvious connection between those magnets in the middle there. One magnet way up at the top, one magnet way down at the bottom, but there's a connection between them. What I hope to demonstrate before this is over is that this same connection between those two magnets is also a connection that we have throughout the entire universe. Now, some of this I'm going to hold off for the future, but what we want to do right now is see that even our planet has a magnetic field that connects it with other planets. And before we do that, we already saw that you can't see a magnetic field unless you've got something that's showing it. I'm also seeing I'm running out of time. Do we have the video showing magnetic deflection of an electron beam? Okay, here you have an electron beam. Electrons have a negative charge, and he's bringing a magnet up close to that beam. And as you can see, as the magnet gets close to the beam actually bends down. Well, this also occurs in the charged particles that are coming from the sun in our direction to our planet, but also to other planets. If you would go ahead and display Mag 01, and you see the streaks going up from the green area in that, these are the northern lights. They're something that you can see when you're up in the north when there is a solar storm coming our way. They're actually being guided by the magnetic field around the northern portion of the earth and the southern portion of the earth. Go ahead to the next image. That's another picture of the same thing, only this is taken from the International Space Station. But this is something that does not only occur on this planet alone. Next frame. Here's a picture of our sun during an eclipse. And you'll notice it has the same pattern both at the top and at the bottom, where you have lines that are going around, going away from the disk, at the top being one pole and at the bottom being another pole. This is also evidence of the same magnetic field that is surrounding the sun. It's not just limited to the earth and the sun. Next frame, please. Anyone recognize that as Jupiter? The bluish light you see up at the top is the northern lights on Jupiter. The next frame, you see the same thing in Saturn. The next frame, that's Uranus, has the same thing. The next frame, that is actually a brown dwarf. It's not quite a star, but it's a little bit more than a planet. And it has the same effect taking place around the northern part of it. Now, another experiment I'd like to show you. Another way that a magnetic field can be seen is by the effect that it has on particulate matter, very small particles of dust that are floating around in space. I've got this here just to provide for... Can we see through that? No, not really. This might not work. No, I'm afraid we don't have enough light for this. Let's try it. No, that's not going to work. I was kind of afraid that this would take place, but there's not quite enough light to do this. But what it was showing is that polarized light going through a medium can cause different colors to come through. If we go ahead and show the next image. Okay. In this image, the dark areas are stars, they're planets, they're clusters of stars. But if you can see the lines going between those stars and reaching out into space, those are actually magnetic fields that are starting in those stars, but also moving out, connecting one star to another. Next frame. This is a look at one portion of our own galaxy. And you can see the same lines reaching out between the individual stars within the galaxy, but also out into space where there are no stars. Next frame. I believe it's a video. Yes. Okay, and here you see another picture of our own galaxy, but our own galaxy has these lines that are reaching out billions and billions of light years away from the edge of the galaxy. Next frame. Okay, this frame right here, this is a galaxy with the magnetic field around that galaxy actually drawn in. And this is not just an artist drawing it in. There are actually material around that galaxy that is doing strange things to the light that is coming to us. And we were actually able to draw that in based on that data. Next frame. Okay. And the two purple areas are actually two galaxy clusters. They've been named Abel 399 and Abel 401. My time is up. Got to turn it over. Yahweh bless your understanding. If you'd all please stand. Our next speaker, the great Kohen David Heimerman Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. It's an honor and a privilege to address the called out ones of the house of Yahweh, those of you gathered here in the sanctuary, and all of you who are able to hear this message going out to the world because of the technology that Daniel said would be in these last days when knowledge would be increased. You may be seated. The title of the sermon today is In the Generation of Yahweh's Last Days, Two Witnesses, Jacob and Yisrael Hawkins. The prophecy in Micaiah chapter 7, verse 11. The day that your walls are to be rebuilt, that day your boundaries will be far extended. We are here part of the establishment of the house of Yahweh. And the prophet Micaiah, who just made that prophecy we just read, he also spoke about the establishment of the house of Yahweh in the chief of the nations, United States of America. Clearly today, militarily and economically, the United States is the chief of the nations where the house of Yahweh would be established. So in Micaiah 4:1, but in the last days it will come to pass that the mountain promotion of the house of Yahweh will be established in the chief of the nations. It will be raised above all congregations and all people will eventually flow to it. And Yahshua spoke of this work. He spoke of this work. And when in Matthew 21, verse 43, he said, therefore, I, Yahshua, say to you, the kingdom of Yahweh will be taken from you and given to a people of the same habit, but from a foreign land, this country right here, the United States, and they will bring forth the fruits of it. I'd like to distinguish that between this work here, make a distinction between what I'm about, between the house of Yahweh established here and what I'd like to bring forth in the information here today, which is really the fulfillment of Micaiah 7:11, and it's talking about the creation of the state of Israel in the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So who is he talking to here? Who is Micaiah talking to about in Micaiah 7, verse 11? He's talking to those spoken of in Micaiah 7, verse 3, which, then I said, hear now, O heads of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel. And these are the same people, the Hebrew people, that 1 Samuel 8, verses 4 and 5 speaks of, when he said, then all the elders of Israel gathered together and approached Samuel, saying to him, appoint for us a king to judge us, just like all the other nations. And so, and then now the prophecy, in which I'd like to speak to you today, Micaiah 7, 11, and 12, the day that your walls are to be rebuilt, that day your boundary will be far extended. That day, verse 12, they will come against you. The word in the book of Yahweh, it's translated to, it can easily be translated against. That day they will come against you from Assyria and from the fortified cities of Egypt, from Egypt to the river Euphrates, from sea to sea, from mountain to mountain. So let's move on. I've got a couple questions for you that you can think about as I give the information here today. The first one is, what historic events led up to the signing of the seven-year covenant spoken of in Daniel 9:27, called the 1993 Oslo Accords, negotiated between Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin and PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat? The second question, did the State of Israel exist 100 years ago? Third question, why are Arab people living in the West Bank and Gaza called Palestinians? Why are they called Palestinians? And the fourth question, what probably the most important question here, what year did Otis and Maggie Hawkins, the parents of Yahweh's two witnesses, get married? What year did they get married? Okay, so let's go back to the time period when Ode and Maggie got married, which was 1923. Let's talk about the mandate for Palestine, which was really the start, if you will, of the creation of this eventual creation of the State of Israel. So during World War I, British Foreign Secretary Arthur Balfour This was in 1917, sent the Balfour Declaration to Baron Rothschild. He was a leader of the British Jewish community that stated that Britain intended the creation of a Jewish national home within the Palestinian Mandate. And this is from Wikipedia. And again, so who is he speaking to here? The leaders of the Jewish community, those spoken of in Micaiah 3:1. Then I said, "Hear now, O heads of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel." Almost need to get my technology working here to show you these maps. I'm going to continue with the just a little bit of the text here. The mandate for Palestine. And first of all, mandate means authority to govern. So Britain, after World War I, was given temporary authority to rule the Middle East. And so in Palestine, the Balfour Declaration's national home for the Jewish people was to be established beside the Palestinian, alongside the Palestinian Arabs, who comprised the vast majority of local population. So at this time, in Palestine, there were 55,000 Jewish people, but there were 650,000 Arab people, a 12-to-1 ratio, basically, of Arabs to Jewish. So Jewish population estimated at 55,000 people and Palestinian Arab population estimated at 650,000 people after World War I. This mandate for Palestine didn't apply to Jordan. It only applied to Palestine. The British controlled Palestine for almost three decades, overseeing a succession of protests, riots, and revolts between Jewish and Palestinian Arab communities. It was sort of a three-way battle going on between the Arabs and the Jewish and the British. This is the British mandate for Palestine. This map was from 1921. Okay, and so right here, this area right here, that was called Palestine. It wasn't called Israel at the time. It was called Palestine. And this is Transjordan, part of the British Mandate. Up on the right here was Iraq, part of the British Mandate also. And the French controlled Syria at the time. And you see the other countries, Egypt and Saudi Arabia. So in this same time period, when this concept of the State of Israel being created came into being, you had Yahweh's two witnesses being born. Jacob Hawkins was born in 1924. And 10 years later, his brother, Yisrael Hawkins, born in 1934. This map is another map regarding the mandate for Palestine. Okay, so let me see if I can switch to my technology here. I guess it needs battery power to work. Okay, there we go. So here you see this map is from 1922, and what's interesting about this is they've named it at the time Jewish Palestine. There were very few Jewish people there, but they named it Jewish Palestine. And so this was the area where they were considering a homeland for the Jewish people. One interesting thing I find with this map is that the Golan Heights at this time was considered part of Jewish Palestine. And I think that's part of the claim today that Israel has for the Golan Heights being part of Israel, which they did annex to their country. Okay, on 29, the 11th month of 1947, the United Nations, which is a relatively newly organized body of people at that time, the United Nations, partition plan, and a partition plan is separating the land, dividing Jewish Palestine into land for the Jewish people and the Arab people that already lived there. The partition plan for Palestine was passed, envisioning the creation of separate Jewish and Arab states operating under economic union, with the city of Jerusalem being transferred to U.S. trusteeship. An international city. This idea of Jerusalem being an international city has been around since 1947 or earlier. 2 weeks later, Colonel Secretary Arthur Creech Jones announced that the British mandate would terminate on 15 of the fifth month, 1948, on the last day of the mandate, the creation of the State of Israel was proclaimed, and the 1948 Arab-Israeli War began. So after World War II, which ended in 1945, Britain found itself in intense conflict with the British, with the Jewish community over Jewish immigration limits, as well as continued conflict with the Arab community over limit levels. This was one of their main contention points. The Jewish people wanted to move to Palestine, and the Arab people didn't want a lot of people coming into Palestine. And the British, they were caught in the middle, and they tended to restrict Jewish immigration. The Haganah joined Ingham and Lehi. Now, these were three Jewish military groups that defended the Jewish people in a armed struggle. So these three groups joined together in an armed struggle against British rule. At the same time, hundreds of thousands of Jewish Holocaust survivors and refugees sought a new life far from their destroyed communities in Europe. They attempted to bring these refugees to Palestine, but many were turned away and rounded up and placed in detention camps in Atlid and Cyprus by the British. On 22 of the 7th month, 1946, one of these Jewish groups attacked, Ingen attacked the British administration headquarters for Palestine, which was housed at the southern wing of the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. A total of 91 people from various nationalities, and I'm sure a lot of these were British people, British officials, they were part of this, housed in the King David Hotel, were killed, and 46 were injured. The hotel was the site of the Secretariat of the Government of Palestine and the headquarters of the British Armed Forces in Mandatory Palestine and Transjordan. Modern-day Jordan is Transjordan. It was conceived, this raid, as a response to Operation Agatha and was the deadliest directed against the British during the Mandate era. In 1947, the British government announced it would withdraw from Palestine, stating it was unable to arrive at a solution acceptable between Arabs and Jews. So you can see some of this peace negotiations that are going on, have been going on since 93. It's difficult to reach a decision. On 15 of the 5th month, 1947, the General Assembly of the United Nations resolved that the United Nations Special Committee on Palestine be created to prepare for consideration a report on the question of Palestine. So in the report that they came up with, dated the 9th month of 1947, to the General Assembly, the majority of the committee in Chapter 6 proposed a plan to replace the British mandate. Now notice what their proposal was back in 1947. They were proposing an independent Arab state, an independent Jewish state, and the city of Jerusalem under international trusteeship. Then on 29 of the 11th month, 1947, the General Assembly adopted the Resolution 181 recommending the adoption and implementation of the plan of partition. There's dividing the land between the Jewish groups and the Arab groups who lived in Palestine. The plan attached to the resolution was essentially that proposed by the majority of the committee in the report of 3 in the 11th month, or 9th month there, in 1947. The Jewish agency, which was the recognized representative of the Jewish community, accepted the plan. However, the Arab League and Arab Higher Committee of Palestine rejected it and indicated they would reject any other plan for partition or division of the land. On the following day, 1 of the 12th month, 1947, the Arab Higher Committee proclaimed a three-day strike, and Arab bands began attacking Jewish targets. The Jews, who were initially on the defensive as civil war broke out, but in early of the fourth month of 1948, moved onto the offensive. The Arab-Palestinian economy collapsed, and 250,000 Palestinian Arabs fled or were expelled. One thing about these Arabs fleeing, their leaders, their Arab leaders told them, hey, we think it's best if you leave while this war goes on, and you can all come back when it's over with. They never came back. These refugees, these Palestinians that left, They never came back because the Arabs didn't win this war. On 14 May of 1948, the day before the expiration of the British mandate, David Ben-Gurion, the head of the Jewish agency, declared the establishment of the Jewish state in Eretz Israel to be known as the State of Israel, the only reference in the text of the declaration of the borders of the new state is the use of the term Eretz Israel, the land of Israel. So continuing with the establishment of the State of Israel, the following day, the armies of four Arab countries, Egypt, Syria, Transjordan or Jordan, and Iraq, entered what had been British Mandatory Palestine, launching the 1948 Arab-Israeli War. Contingents, they were joined by other Arab countries' contingents here from Yemen, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, and Sudan, joined the war. The apparent purpose of the invasion was to prevent the establishment of the Jewish state at inception, and some Arab leaders talked about driving the Jews into the sea. The Arab League stated that the invasion was to restore law and order and prevent further bloodshed. So this is what the Prophet Micaiah, what the world looked like in the Prophet Micaiah's time period. And so first of all, the scripture, the day that your walls, and consider that walls can also mean borders. It can also mean borders, you sons of Jacob, you leaders of the house of Israel. The day that your walls or borders are to be rebuilt, that day your boundary will be far extended. And notice, that day they will come against you from Assyria, modern-day Syria, and the fortified cities of Egypt, from Egypt to the river Euphrates, Iraq, these other countries that are being spoken of here, from sea to sea, from the Mediterranean Sea to the Red Sea, and from mountain to mountain. So on the map here, this is the area. Here's Assyria, and down here is Egypt, and here's the river Euphrates. A little bit hard to see. Establishment of the State of Israel. After a year of fighting, a ceasefire was declared and temporary borders known as the Green Line. So keep that in mind. When you think of your walls being extended or rebuilt, your borders being solidified, that's what they call today the Green Line, was established. Jordan annexed what became known as the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, and Egypt took control of the Gaza Strip. The UN estimated that more than 700,000 Palestinians were expelled or fled, left voluntarily, thinking they were going to come back after the Arabs won the war, which they didn't. 700,000 Palestinians were expelled by or fled from advancing Israeli forces during the conflict. What would become known in Arabic as the Nakba catastrophe. However, about 156,000 remained and became Arab citizens of Israel. So here you have a map here. If you look at the green territory there, that is Israel after the 1948 war. That is, and the border around it is what they call the Green Line. The Green Line. The Green Line, or the line around this green territory on the map here. And then you see here, you see Gaza, which was under the control of Egypt after the armistice. You see Samaria and Judea here under the control of Jordan under the armistice. And the Golan Heights were part of Syria at that time. And so if you look at that territory there, that was what was partitioned and subsequently gained from the 48 war for the state of the creation of the State of Israel. And the Green Line, with respect to Jerusalem, effectively divided the holy city of Jerusalem in half, with the Israel-Jordan border running through the middle of the city, with the old city and its holy sites fully under Jordanian control and under Jordanian side. This is a map from the BBC before the 1967 war. And you see basically the same thing there. You see what you hear now in the news as the West Bank of territories, the West Bank territories. And here down here is Gaza was under control of the Egyptians. And the part here is this part is Israel after the armistice was signed. So this state for 19 years or 18 years from these borders, from 1948 to 1967, the West Bank, including East Jerusalem, was ruled by Jordan. During this period, the Gaza Strip was under Egyptian military administration. Israeli troops captured, now this is in 56 now, Egypt did some things with the Suez Canal to block shipping. So in 1956, the British, French, and Israeli military campaign in response to the nationalization of the Suez Canal, the Israelis subsequently withdrew and were replaced with a UN force. Now, however, in 1967, Egypt ordered the UN troops out. Things were heating up. Things were getting serious with Israel moving troops close to the Israeli border. And one of the things they did was Egypt told the UN troops to leave and blocked Israeli shipping routes down to the Red Sea from the Gulf of Aqaba, adding to the already high levels of tension between Israel and its neighbors. The Six-Day War, which occurred in 1967. In a preemptive attack on Egypt that drew Syria and Jordan into a regional war in 1967, this preemptive attack, Israel sent their warplanes to bomb Egyptian airfields on the morning, I think, the 5th of... Anyway, they sent their preemptive attack on the Egyptian airfields. They destroyed most of the Egyptian Air Force. Egypt had about 425 planes. They destroyed about 400 planes, MiG-21s, MiG-17s, Russian bombers, in the first 2 days of the war. In a preemptive attack on Egypt that drew Syria and Jordan into a regional war in 1967, Israel made massive territorial gains. Just as the prophet said in Micaiah 7, verse 11, your boundary will be far extended. And I'll show you that on a map here shortly. Capturing the West Bank, capturing the Gaza Strip, capturing the Golan Heights, capturing the Sinai Peninsula, and the city of Jerusalem. Israel captured all of them. The principle of land for peace that has formed the basis of Arab-Israeli negotiations is based on Israel giving up land won in the 1967 war in return for peace deals, recognizing Israeli borders and its right to security. The Sinai Peninsula was returned to Egypt as part of the 1979 peace deal with Egypt. So this is the map after the Six-Day War. And incidentally, Yitzhak Rabin named the war. He named it after the 6 days of creation. It was named by Yitzhak Rabin, the Six-Day War. So here they gained the Egyptian Sinai, all of that land, all this land and all of here the West Bank of the Palestinian territories. The Jordanians fled back to their side of the river, and they got the Golan Heights and the city Jerusalem. They got all of it, and the Gaza Strip also. So the word walls here, the word walls that we read in Micaiah 7, verse 11, it can mean a circumvallation or an enclosure, a fence, a wall, a hedge. It can mean a border. Primitive root to walk around, to wall in or to close up, to fence up, hedge, enclose. Brown, Driver, and Briggs talks about enclosing walls, a fence, a border, bordering a road. Connected with, and with Yekeski's temple, that had a wall all around it, a 10.5-foot high wall. And then the three gates, of course, for access inside for those who are authorized. So let's go back to our questions that we asked earlier at the start of this. What historic events led up to the 7-year covenant? What historic events led up to this signing of the peace treaty? Why was it necessary to have a peace treaty in the first place? Why? Called the 1993 Oslo Accords. He put everything in place. He put everything in place for this. He established the house of Yahweh. He created the state of Israel. And so, continuing here, called the 1993 Oslo Accords, negotiated with Prime Minister Rabin and PLO Chairman Arafat. And the answer is the events that led up to this. The British defeated the Ottoman Empire in World War I, the creation of the British Mandate for Palestine, the 1948 creation of the State of Israel, and the 1967 Six-Day War, when they captured the West Bank territories and all this other land. And that's, and it's occupied. A month or 6 weeks ago, Abbas, he said, we don't want to be occupied anymore. What, who's occupying their territory? Israeli troops, if they choose to. If they choose to. Question two. Did the State of Israel exist 100 years ago? No. The land was part of the British Palestine Mandate after World War I. 2 years ago, in 2017, there was a news article on the date that the Balfour Doctrine was declared, 100 years ago. And it was interesting to note that Hebrew people around the world celebrated and Arab people protested. Final two questions here. Why are the Arab people living in the West Bank and Gaza called Palestinians? Answer, the area called Israel, Gaza, and West Bank today was formerly named Palestine. And the most important question is number four here. What year did Otis and Maggie Hawkins, the parents of Yahweh's two witnesses, get married? 1923. Right around the same time that Yahweh was moving for the creation of the house of Yahweh, he was also planning for the creation of the State of Israel. In the generation of Yahweh's last day's two witnesses, Jacob and Yisrael Hawkins, the prophet Micaiah declared to the heads of Jacob, you rulers of the house of Israel, the day that your walls are to be rebuilt, that day your boundary will be far extended. Yahweh bless you and keep you. Please stand, and we'll have closing prayer.